The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi there, this is Janice Peary from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Our first book today is Amazing Grace by Mary Hoffman. Grace was a girl who loved stories. She didn't mind if they were read to her or told to her or made up in her own head. She didn't care if they were from books or movies or out of Nana's long memory. Grace just loved stories. And after she had heard them, and sometimes even while they were still going on, Grace would act them out. And she always gave herself the most exciting part. Grace went into battle as Joan of Arc. Joan of Arc was a famous woman who helped the French soldiers drive the British English soldiers away from her country. And she also wove a wicked web as Anansi the Spider. Anansi the Spider comes from African stories, folklore. She hid inside the wooden horse at the gates of Troy, and here she has made a wooden horse out of a box where she's hiding inside and added a stick with a sort of funny-looking horse's head on one end and a big brush taped to the other end to be the horse's tail. She went exploring for lost kingdoms, and there she was with her friends playing, and there she is riding on an elephant to explore in the jungles. She sailed the seven seas as a peg leg, the pirate, and with her parrot, and her kitty cat is along with her. She was Aladdin, rubbing his magic lamp to make the genie appear, and she was Mowgli in the backyard jungle. She's pretending to be the little boy who grew up with the wolves and the other animals in the jungles. Most of all, Grace loved to act out adventure stories and fairy tales. When there was no one else around, Grace played all the parts herself. She set out to seek her fortune with no companion but her trusty cat. And she found a city with streets paved in gold. Sometimes when she could get Ma and Nana to join in when they weren't too busy. Then she was Dr. Grace, and their lives were in her hand. And there she is listening to her grandma's chest with a wooden spoon that she's pretending to be a stethoscope, just like the doctor does for you. There's her mama all bandaged up and a bandage around her forehead and pretending to be so sick. Grace had such a good imagination. One day, Grace's teacher said that they would do the play Peter Pan. Grace knew who she wanted to be. When she raised her hand, Raj said, "You can't be Peter. That's a boy's name." But Grace kept her hand up. "You can't be Peter Pan," whispered Natalie. "He isn't black." "All right," said the teacher. "Lots of you want to be Peter. So we'll have to have auditions next week so we can choose parts." And she gave them all words to learn. When Grace got home, she seemed sad. "What's the matter?" asked Ma. "Raj said I couldn't be Peter Pan because I'm a girl." "Now that just shows what Raj knows," said Ma. "A girl can be Peter Pan if she wants to." Grace cheered up, and then later she remembered something else. "Natalie says I can't be Peter Pan because I'm black," she said. Ma looked very angry. But before she could speak, Nana said, "It seems Natalie is another one who don't know nothing. You can be anything you want, Grace, if you put your mind to it." On Saturday, Nana told Grace that they were going out. In the afternoon, they caught a bus and it took a train into town. Nana took Grace to a grand theater. The sign outside read, "Rosalie Wilkins in Romeo and Juliet, all in sparkling lights." Are we going to the ballet, Nana? Asked Grace. Yes, honey, we are. But first I want you to look at this picture. Grace looked up and saw a beautiful young ballerina in a tutu. Above the dancer it said, Stunning New Juliet. That one is little Rosalie from back home in Trinidad, said Nana. Her granny and me, we grew up together on the island. She's always asking me, do I want tickets to see her Rosalie dance? And so this time I said yes. And so it turned out that Natalie was a black lady. After the ballet, Grace played the part of Juliet, dancing around her room in her imaginary tutu. I can be anything I want, she thought. On Monday, the class met for auditions to choose who was best for each part. When it was Grace's turn to be Peter, she knew exactly what to do and all the words to say. She had been Peter Pan all weekend. She took a deep breath and imagined herself flying. When it was time to vote, the class chose Rog to be Captain Hook and Natalie to be Wendy. And there was no doubt who would be Peter Pan. Everyone voted for Grace. You were fantastic, whispered Natalie. And the play was a big success, and Grace was an amazing Peter Pan. After it was all over, she said, I feel as if I could fly all the way home. You probably could, said Ma. Yes, said Nana. If Grace put her mind to it, she can do anything she wants. And that just goes to show that if you want to do something, no matter what other people say, and if you try hard enough, you will be good at everything you do. And that's the end of that story. Our next story is called Little Bear and the Marco Polo by Elsa Homeland Minerick. Little Bear was in the garden playing with his ladybug. When Grandmother Bear called, Little Bear, Grandfather needs help in the attic. Little Bear loved the attic. He hurried to join Grandfather Bear, and he took his ladybug along. When Little Bear got to the attic, Grandfather Bear was sweeping. What a lot of dust, they both sneezed. Achoo! Achoo! Let's open the window, said Grandfather. I'll do it, said Little Bear. He opened the window, and Ladybug flew off. Grandfather, said Little Bear, my ladybug flew away. Grandfather said, Don't worry, she'll be back again. Grandfather Bear said, Ouch, my back, I am growing so stiff. Little Bear, would you help me open the trunk? Little Bear was so glad to do it. They opened the trunk, and there was a blue jacket and a fancy blue cap. Grandfather put the cap on Little Bear's head. He draped the jacket over Little Bear's shoulders. There, he said, that makes you a sea captain, just as I was. Little Bear found a mirror and admired himself. Look at me, Grandfather, now I am a sea captain, just like you, but all I need is a ship. But Grandfather Bear was sitting in his old chair. He had dozed off. Little Bear looked in the trunk again. He found a picture of a ship. Oh, cried Little Bear, what a fine ship! And that woke Grandfather Bear up. Why, that is my ship, my own little ship, called the Marco Polo. They both studied the picture. Why does it have that name? Asked Little Bear. Because, said Grandfather, Marco Polo was a sea captain too, and he explored the world. The world, Little Bear wondered. And by now Grandfather was wide awake. He said, Fetch me the globe from over there. See, said Grandfather, the world is round, the water is blue, and the rest is land. Little Bear looked at the globe. What is all that white? That, said Grandfather Bear, is the North Pole, where the polar bear lives. Little Bear asked, If we sailed there together, what would happen? Grandfather laughed. Well, I'd shake the polar bear's paw, and you'd shake his paw, too. Little Bear wanted to know more. Where would we sail next, he asked. Grandfather Bear said, Next we would sail to China to meet the giant panda bear. "What would he look like?" asked Little Bear. "Oh," said Grandfather, "he is white and black and very grand indeed." "Are there other bears in other places?" Little Bear asked. Grandfather Bear said, "In Australia, there are koala bears. We could sail to Australia and meet some. They live in trees there." "Well, I could live in trees too," said Little Bear. But Grandfather asked, "But could you also live only on leaves?" Little Bear laughed and shook his head. "No, thank you." "But here we are in the attic," said Grandfather Bear. "Let's see what else is in this trunk." They found a beautiful white dress and a picture of a lovely young bear wearing that dress. Grandfather Bear smiled. He said, "There she is, your grandmother, wearing this dress." "She is wonderful," said Little Bear. "And that is what I thought, too," said Grandfather Bear. "So I asked her to marry me." "And she did," shouted Little Bear. "Yes, I was very lucky," said his grandfather. Little Bear asked, "And then? Did you go sailing around the world together?" "No," said Grandfather Bear. "Grandmother Bear wanted to build a house first. Our friends, the raccoons, helped us to build it." "And afterward, did you go around the world together?" asked Little Bear. "No," said Grandfather Bear, "because then we had to plant the fruit trees and the berry bushes." They're making a nice garden in their yard. Little Bear leaned on Grandfather's lap. He looked up at Grandfather and said, "I do like fruits and berries, but I wonder about Marco Polo. Where is the Marco Polo now?" "The Marco Polo is in dry dock," said Grandfather Bear. "Do you want to see it?" Yes, Little Bear wanted to see the Marco Polo with all his heart. On the way through the kitchen, they gave Grandmother Bear the white dress. Little Bear said, "If you put on the dress, I'll dance with you when we come back for lunch. We are going to see the Marco Polo." The Marco Polo rested on a wooden frame by the river. Some raccoons were washing it down. Little Bear took a deep breath. "It's even more beautiful than I thought," he said. Grandfather Bear wiped away a tear. Little Bear climbed aboard. "Ahoy there," he called to the raccoons. "I will be your captain." Little Bear saluted, and the raccoons cheered. "We will sail around the world. Just you wait and see," said Little Bear. And then it was time to go home. Little Bear took Grandfather Bear's paw. "You're not sad, are you, Grandfather?" he asked, looking up at Grandfather Bear. "No, Grandfather Bear was not sad. I'm just plain hungry, Little Bear," he said. And there they go, marching back to the house. Grandmother Bear had a picnic basket ready and waiting, and she was the white dress that they, Little Bear and his grandfather, had found upstairs in the trunk. "It's just a little tight," she said, laughing. Little Bear looked up at Grandmother and took her paw and said, "Lovely lady, will you marry me?" "Too late," said Grandfather Bear. "She's already mine." "And," said Grandmother Bear, "both of you are mine. You may now help each other carry the picnic basket out to the garden." "See, Little Bear," said Grandfather, "there's no place like home. Just remember that when you begin to sail around the world." Little Bear nodded. He would have answered, but his mouth was full of cookie, a peanut butter and chocolate one. My favorite. The next story is one that many of you will know already. It is The Lion King, and here it's been adapted by Jennifer Lieberts. It was a proud day for King Mufasa and Queen Sarabi. Their newborn cub, Simba, had joined the great circle of life. One day Simba would take his father's place and become the Lion King. Today, the little cub was being presented to the entire animal kingdom. A wise old baboon named Rafiki marked the lion cub's forehead with red dust. And then he held Simba high in the air for all the animals to see. Mufasa's brother Scar did not attend the celebration. He was angry that Simba was next in line to rule the kingdom. Scar had always wanted to be king. Mufasa, disappointed in his younger brother, visited Scar's cave. "Don't turn your back on me, Scar," Mufasa growled. Over time, Simba grew into a strong young cub. One morning, Mufasa took Simba to the top of the Pride Rock. "Everything the light touches is our kingdom," Mufasa explained. Simba was curious about the dark spot of the land in the distance. Mufasa warned Simba never to go to that shadowy place beyond their borders. It was too dangerous. Later that day, Simba saw Scar on a rocky ledge. "Uncle Scar," called Simba proudly, "someday I'm going to rule the whole kingdom." "Well, everything except for the shadowy place." "Right," said Scar. "Only the bravest lions go there. An elephant graveyard is no place for a young prince." Scar had set a dangerous trap for the young lion. He knew that Simba would want to prove that he was brave. Sure enough, Simba ran off to ask his best friend, Nala, to go exploring with him. Simba and Nala wandered into the Shadowlands. Suddenly, they found themselves in the elephant graveyard surrounded by three hyenas. Zazu, the king's helper, heard the hyenas' evil laughter and flew down to protect Simba and Nala. Zazu stood between the hyenas and the cubs, but he was no match for the hungry hyenas. Simba and Nala were in trouble. Just as the hyenas were about to attack, Mufasa leapt in front of Simba, Nala, and Zazu. He had the hyenas cornered. Before the hyenas could escape, Mufasa held them down with his powerful paws. "Don't you ever come near my son again," he warned with a deep growl. The hyenas ran away. Mufasa was angry that Simba had disobeyed him. Simba was sad that he had disappointed his father. Mufasa led the cubs back to the Pride Lands. No one noticed Scar watching from the distance in the shadows. That night, Mufasa took Simba out to play in the grass. Mufasa knew Simba hadn't planned to put himself or Nala in danger, but he wanted to make sure he stayed safe. "Being brave does not mean that you are to go out looking for trouble," he reminded his son. Mufasa and Simba gazed at the stars. "The great kings of the past looked down on us from those stars," said Mufasa. "Whenever you feel alone, just remember that those kings will always be there to guide you. And so will I." Meanwhile, Scar visited the hyenas at the elephant graveyard. He was angry that they'd let Simba go. He came up with a new wicked plan. This time, Simba and Mufasa would not get away. The next day, Scar lured Simba to a deep gorge and told him to wait on a rock. "Your father has a marvelous surprise for you," Scar lied before creeping away. With Simba alone, Scar set his plan in motion. He told the hyenas to scare a herd of wild beasts. The frightened wild beasts stampeded and right for Simba. Scar ran to Mufasa and Zazu to tell them the cub was in danger. He led them to the gorge where they saw Simba hanging from a tree branch. "Hold on, Simba," Mufasa cried. And what do you think happened next? Before Simba could fall beneath the pounding hooves of the wild beasts, Mufasa grabbed him. But as he carried his son away, a wild beast knocked Mufasa to the ground. Mufasa struggled to climb to safety, but his body was so tired from running through the stampede. Scar saw him hanging from the edge of a cliff. "Brother, help me," pleaded Mufasa. Scar dug his claws into Mufasa's paws and pulled him close. "Long live the king," whispered Scar before he let Mufasa fall. As last the wild beasts left the gorge, the dust settled. Simba could see his father lying still on the ground. He ran to his side. "Dad, Dad, come on," Simba cried as he tried to wake Mufasa. "Get up." Simba prodded the king with his paws all over and over. He called his father's name and pulled his ear, but Mufasa didn't move. Simba curled up beside Mufasa and cried. He stayed there until he heard a voice calling him. "Simba," Scar said coldly, "if it weren't for you, the king would still be alive. Run away, Simba, and never return." Simba ran and ran. Scar ordered the hyenas to get rid of Simba. They chased the cub all the way to the edge of a plateau. But when Simba leapt into a thorny patch of bushes below, the hyenas were too cowardly to follow. "He's as good as dead anyway," they said as Simba escaped. There are those mean-looking hyenas looking down into where Simba fell. Simba walked for miles under the hot sun until he collapsed. Luckily, Timon the meerkat and Pumbaa the warthog found him and carried him to a water hole. Simba told them that they could not go back to Pride Rock, Timon and Pumbaa took him to their homes and even showed him how to eat bugs. "This is a great life," said Timon. "No rules, no responsibilities, and no worries. Hakuna Matata." With the help of his new friends, Simba learned to live life with no worries. He grew into a strong young lion. But one night, as they gazed at the stars, Simba remembered his father's words. "Someone once told me that the great kings of the past are up there, watching over us," he told Simba and Pumbaa sadly. The next day, a lioness chased Pumbaa through the jungle. Simba pounced, and the two lions fought until the lioness pinned Simba to the ground. Simba looked into her eyes and recognized, "Nala, it's me, Simba." "Simba," Nala cried, "everyone thought you were dead, but you're alive, and that means that you're the king." Nala told Simba that the cruel King Scar had ruined the Pride Lands. The animals were starving and hyenas were everywhere. Simba could claim the throne, but he was afraid to go back. That night, the wise old baboon, Rafiki, came to see Simba. He led Simba to a small pool, where at first Simba saw only his own reflection. But then he saw his father's face in the water. "You see," Rafiki said, "you are Mufasa's boy. He lives in you." At that very moment, Mufasa's image appeared in the clouds. "You must take your place in the circle of life," Mufasa said. "Remember who you are. You are my son and the one to be the true king." Simba now knew that he must go home. Simba and his friends returned to the Pride Lands the following day. Simba was horrified to see that Scar had let the land go to ruin. No trees grew and bones were scattered everywhere. His uncle had not respected the circle of life. As Simba prepared to face Scar, his friends reminded him that they would always be by his side. "We're with you until the end," Timon promised. Meanwhile, Queen Sarabi had gone to speak with Scar. She told him that all the animals must leave Pride Rock. There was no food left, but Scar refused to listen. Suddenly, Scar heard a deep roar. He turned and saw a huge lion. "Mufasa," he said fearfully, "but you're dead." "Mufasa," Sarabi said, confused. And then she recognized the lion as her son. "Simba!" Simba commanded Scar to step down or fight. "I've come back to take my place as king," Simba declared. Scar was not willing to let his nephew take his throne. "It's your fault Mufasa's dead," Scar said as he backed Simba towards the edge of Pride Rock. Scar lunged at Simba and forced him off the cliff's end. As Simba struggled to hold on, Scar leaned over him. Lightning hit the ground and a fire began to burn all around this. "Now, this looks familiar," Scar said with an evil smile. "This is just the way your father looked before I killed him." Simba immediately filled with rage. With all his strength, he leapt at Scar and they battled as the fire grew around them. Scar fought hard to protect his place as king, but he could not defeat Simba. Simba chased Scar off the cliff. As Scar fell, Simba repeated what Scar had told him all those years before. "Run away, run away and never return. And there's Scar falling off the cliff into the fire. Simba climbed to the top of Pride Rock. Rain fell from the sky, and he let it wash all over him. The rain washed out the fires that were burning everywhere from the lightning. He remembered his father and all he had learned from him. Simba held his head high and let out a powerful roar. At last, he was the Lion King. Under Simba's rule, the Pride Lands once again became a place where herds came to graze and the trees grew strong and tall. And soon King Simba and the Queen Nala had their own newborn cub for the king to celebrate and to welcome the circle into the circle of life. And that's the end of The Lion King. Now we have a few minutes left, so we're going to read some poems from the Please and Thank You book by Barbara Shook Hazan. Sorry, I missed her last name. Hazan. And these are little poems that tell you how to behave and also how not to behave. This one is Bears Always Share. Bears share their toys. Bears share their honey. Bears share a joke they think is funny. Whatever they do, whatever they wear, they share it with another bear. They sound like nice animals, don't they? This one says, watch out for Wanda Warthog. When Wanda Warthog comes over, beware. She leaves a trail just everywhere. There's ink on the sofa and gum on the cat, mottling clay ground into the mat. Her dirty finger pricks streak the wall. She's broken her best friend's favorite doll. Oops, there goes her dish of raspberry ice. That's why poor Wanda is never asked twice. She is a mess. Welcome, Ricky Raccoon. When Ricky Raccoon comes over to play, he helps put all the toys away. He asks his friend what he'd like to do and is always careful with scissors and glue. He washes before he comes to the table and helps his host whenever he's able. And that's why almost every day someone invites Ricky over to play. This is called Don't Be Grabby Gorilla. Gorillas are rude. They grab their food. They never say, please pass the peach. They're so anxious, they just reach. They upset all the others by all that they do. And sometimes, they even upset the table too. Well, today we have run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. So long until next time, if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.